any disease.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Christopher O'Brien, you have been a busy bee this past weekend. You attended a UFO convention sponsored by the Mutual UFO Network.
The International Symposium.
Okay, this is the big one. This is the big annual conference. And in addition to that, there was a story at LATimes.com. I don't know if it made it to the printed version of the newspaper. Sometimes they don't. But they went on talking about the convention, and they described the attendance as dozens of like-minded individuals. How many people were there?
Boy, that's slanted. It was the largest, I think, international symposium in terms of attendees in several years. They almost doubled last year's attendance figures. There was, 530 was the last number I heard. So it was actually very well attended. You go into the main lecture hall, and, you know, it was pretty filled up, especially, you know, Richard Dolan's talk and Linda Howe and others.
Okay, so we look here at the subscription in the newspaper or the online version of the newspaper, and you wonder exactly what they're getting into. So, for example, now they finally admit later on in the article that there were a few hundred attendees. It said many of the few hundred attendees were baby boomers, children of the space race, who grew up casting an eye to the heavens and never stopped questioning what could be out there. Others came with a more spiritual outlook. They view extraterrestrials as omnipotent protectors who often beckon them in the night. Okay? So then they get to the wackadoodles.
Creative journalism there, Gene. Gah.
The final third of this article is all about the wackadoodles. This is what always happens. This is why we always make that criticism. Okay, if you're going to have a convention, you do want to obviously bring in an audience. Otherwise, you lose money. You have to at least break even, hopefully have a few extra dollars to pay the staff and everything. So sometimes you bring in speakers who are a little bit crazy because they drag in an audience.
Now, one of your favorites was there. A couple of your favorites. Jim Sparks was there and heard some interesting comments about his presentation. And, of course, our dear sweet dragon queen of ufology herself, Linda Howe. She did a very interesting presentation, actually. I didn't actually get a chance to go in and really listen to any of the presenters, but I had a meeting of the San Luis Valley camera team, our first face-to-face meeting with all the members together. And Wayne Hollenbeck actually got the DVD of Linda's talk, so I was able to look at a portion of it a couple of days later, and it was pretty interesting. You know, even though it was about those crazy California drones, she did have some pretty interesting correlations that she was able to magically produce out of her hat to kind of be her final sort of, I don't know, at the very end of her talk, her pièce de résistance was this correlation between the writing on the drone of these crazy California flying objects from several years ago that she's convinced are real, and it correlated with a interesting crop circle formation. I haven't really looked at how exact the correlations were, but
is this the lettering that looked like Star Wars lettering?
Exactly.
Okay, so Star Wars lettering really has some connection to the real world.
Evidently, there was a crop circle that mimicked one of the symbols on one of the drones. I think it was a bit of a stretch, but boy, it was impressive to the crowd, I would imagine. I'm sure there was quite a few oohs and ahs with that one.
And nobody mentioned the fact that these drones were so easily duplicated in Photoshop.
Exactly.
So she's still selling this deal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Linda's, oh, boy, she droned on and on.
Okay, so Jim Sparks, did he address the question again of why he didn't have to use the bathroom when he was spending an entire day aboard a spaceship?
I did not see his presentation. Out of all the presentations, that would have been the one I was probably least likely to see. But I'll tell you, the guy sure did a lot of pacing and muttering to himself outside the convention hall when he wasn't speaking. I saw him on several occasions outside. Seemed very deep in thought and almost perturbed about something. I'm not sure what. I kind of gave him a little wink and a nod, and not sure if I got one back, but I had talked with Jan Harzan several months ago when they announced that Jim Sparks was going to speak. And I said, you know, Jan, I thought you guys were a scientific, investigation organization. Why do you have somebody like Jim Sparks up there? And he says, oh, well, this year it's all about ET contact and, I guess they're trying to be all things to all people.
So basically they're giving up the pretense of presenting scientific information and they're adding the woo-woos.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears there, Gene. I didn't really say that, but now that you mentioned it, yeah.
Oh, well. Well, they got a larger crowd. But the kind of coverage that the LA Times gave them...
They did.
Kind of shows that that's a double-edged sword. So the question is, do you want to bring in a few more people and hopefully cover your expenses at the expense of losing your credibility? And MUFON, for so many years, has been considered a pretty credible organization. Yes, we have the recent controversy with Cliff, and of course, James Carrion, the former director, all that stuff that's gone on. And you think they want to live it down. They want to show, hey, this is a serious organization. We're doing serious business. We're going to stay away from the wackadoodles. Yes, if people want to express individual opinions that we don't agree with, that's fine. If they want to present unconfirmed information, that's fine, but don't get up on the podium and address it.
Yeah, well, I saw, I wasn't privy to the conversation, but of course Elaine Douglas is spearheading an effort to get a more democratic MUFON established with membership having, a say in some of the decision-making, especially in who the board members are for MUFON. And they had a very intense conversation, I could tell, at one point. And I mentioned to Cliff that I thought that, maybe having a minority of the board members, a minority number of them, being elected by the rank and file to create more transparency and more of a democratic feel for the organization. And he, well, we need businessmen there. If we allowed membership to vote, the organization would flounder and die within a year, I think was kind of how he put it. And
what?
Yeah. So I said, well, I don't know how many board members you are, but maybe take, if it's nine, take four members are voted on by the membership, and then maybe the five are appointed by the board members. In terms of an organization, having directors and then self-appointing these directors, I don't know. It's just there's something wrong with that model, and I think
it's
would be
an incestuous relationship where you always reappoint your own.
Yeah, and I think it would be really healthy, and it would help the vibrancy of the organization if they actually allowed the membership to have a little bit more say. And
he's saying, well, they may not choose business people. Well, how do you determine the qualifications of the proper member of the board of directors? Shouldn't you have somebody who is maybe a scientist in there, somebody who is a psychologist or a psychiatrist, people who actually can do real investigations, not just somebody running a business?
Yeah, exactly. I've never been a member of MUFON. I resisted the temptation early on when I got involved in my investigative work. Of course, I'm of the Groucho school. I wouldn't be a member of any group that would have me as one. So that's part of the reason. But the other part of the reason is that it just seems so political, and there seems to be underlying agendas that don't really, have anything to do with the actual, statement of MUFON, in terms of scientifically investigating UFOs. There seems to be a disconnect between the original vision of the organization and what it's devolved into at this point. And of course, we have talked in the past on other shows about the relationship between MUFON and Robert Bigelow and whether that relationship still continues, how the relationship evolved or devolved since it began with the whole STAR Team effort. So there are a lot of problems and issues that need to be addressed in the organization. But the bottom line is, because they're going a little new age, they attract more people. And this doesn't bode well for the organization. I think it, the further towards the woo-woo side of the equation that they go, they're going to see more people getting interested, because people don't like to do their own research. They don't like to think for themselves. They like the media and organizations to do all the heavy lifting, and then they just say, yeah, I agree with that.
Tell you what, we have to agree with this. We're going to leave the subject of MUFON, and we're going to go to the subject, no more woo-woo, to the subject of UFOs and nukes. Our guest today is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes. It's been a couple of years since he's been on the show. Lots of new questions A little bit of controversy, lots more. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, if you ever hosted an online meeting, you know how difficult it is to get those meetings started. It's your reputation at stake if anything goes wrong. That's why you need the easiest, most reliable online meeting service. GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix. Everybody can join a meeting in seconds without any technical headaches. GoToMeeting is so easy, you'll have your first meeting in seconds. See for yourself with this free trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter promo code PODCAST.
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99. And every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
You've heard a lot lately about zeolite, but what is it and why do you need it? Zeolite is a beautiful, complex, crystalline structure that encapsulates radiation and odors. ZeoKing Zeolite naturally eliminates radiation poisoning your body may pick up from x-rays, security scanners, or nuclear fallout. ZeoKing flushes environmental toxins absorbed from smoke, cell phones, and chemicals, so it detoxifies heavy metals including mercury, lead, and cadmium. ZeoKing Zeolite helps boost your immune system, allowing your body to balance itself and cut off food supply to cancer and parasites. Order your ZeoKing Zeolite now from ZeoKing.com for only $39.99 and receive a free month supply with every order. Call 888-402-6779. That's 888-402-6779. Or visit ZeoKing.com. That's ZeoKing.com for natural elimination of radiation poisoning.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic. And as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, UtopiaSilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Returning after several years is Robert Hastings. He's author of a book called UFOs and Nukes, and what it's about is implicit in the title. And for those, Robert, who aren't familiar with your earlier appearance on the PowerCast, I don't want to repeat or reinvent the wheel or start from scratch, but maybe briefly you can talk about what led you to covering this topic and where you found the evidence.
My father was career Air Force, and in 1966-67, he was stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base, Montana, where at that time there were a number of UFO-related incidents at the nuclear missile sites. I ultimately began making inquiries of persons that he knew and other military people who were there at the time and found out that was indeed real. By 1973, researcher Ray Fowler had mentioned in his book, UFOs, Interplanetary Visitors, that he, as a Minuteman missile contractor for Sylvania Corporation, had learned about UFO activity at Malmstrom, so I had all sorts of independent sources that this was indeed real. So I began systematically seeking out and interviewing former and retired Air Force personnel. That was 38 years ago. I've interviewed nearly 130 at this point, retired veterans, former veterans who were involved in these kinds of incidents at various missile bases and other Strategic Air Command facilities.
You mentioned UFOs and nukes. Is it only over nuclear power plants that UFOs are seen? What about traditional power plants?
Well, my research into cases involving commercial plants is minimal. I have a 6-page appendix at the end, but the lion's share of my work relates to the weapons facilities, not the commercial production plants, power plants.
Okay, so the other question I guess would arise, and we can start into the case histories over this, and that is, are UFOs just seen flying over the nuclear power plants, or do they do things that impact the operation of those plants? And we're starting to worry about that more and more because of what happened with the tsunami in Japan, where a couple of stations were knocked out and caused all sorts of problems.
I really can't give you informed answers about the scope of the incidents at nuclear power plants, commercial power plants. So rather than me saying that and wasting time on air, I think we need to focus on the nuclear weapons sites, which I am, an authority on. So rather than spending time with my saying I don't really know much about that, I think we need to retrench here and go back to
Fair enough. Fair enough. So let's move on to the weapons sites. Okay, now the question I would ask before we get on with some of the cases is, do we see, since we're supposedly giving up on nuclear weapons around the world, do we see fewer cases? How recent are they?
It's impossible to quantify the situation because the government is not talking about this voluntarily. So I have to rely on my research efforts, my investigative efforts, to ferret out sources who are involved in these incidents. So it's a catch-as-catch-can process. There's no way you can systematically say or accurately say X number of cases occurred in a given year and therefore, delineate trends or predict future events. So it's a very, it's a large jigsaw puzzle. Lots of pieces are missing. All I can say is that the incidents at FEOR and Air Force Base in October of 2010, which have a very strong UFO connection, suggest to me that as long as nuclear weapons exist, the UFO phenomenon will be associated with it, even though weapons stockpiles in Russia and the U.S. are far lower than they were during the Cold War era. I say in my book, as long as these weapons exist, there are going to be UFO incidents at these sites. And I think the recent events at FEOR in last October verify that beyond doubt.
What were those recent events? Why don't we start with those in terms of case histories?
Well, on October 26, the Atlantic magazine published a story by a contributing editor named Mark Ambinder, in which he revealed that he had leaked to him information that 3 days earlier, on October 23rd, FEOR and Air Force Base lost communications with 50 of its nuclear missiles. I can give you a detailed explanation why, but long story short, those missiles were unlaunchable for that period. The Air Force officially admitted, once the story was leaked, that this did take place, that it was related to a computer glitch, that it lasted 59 minutes. When I began researching this, I quickly learned from ex-military personnel who have active duty contacts at the base that, in fact, this was a 26-hour episode intermittently, but basically these missiles were offline for 26 hours. And so the Air Force was trying to minimize the situation. Beyond that, and more to the point, two Air Force technicians unequivocally stated that over a two-day period, the weekend of October 23rd, 24th, multiple sightings of a huge cigar-shaped object were made by various Air Force technical teams at various locations in this very huge 9,600 square mile missile field where the missiles are located. And over this two-day period, a number of teams came back and were reporting seeing this cigar-shaped object maneuvering around the sky at high altitude. The descriptions provided to me via a retired source, military source, that this was quite clearly not a commercial blip. It was cigar-shaped, similar to a World War I Zeppelin. It had no passenger gondola. It had no advertising on its side, written on its side, like the Goodyear blip. Quite clearly not a commercial blip. In the context of the other reports I've received over the last 6 months from law enforcement in Nebraska, where some of the missiles were located, and a number of civilian witnesses, I know that there have been ongoing UFO sighting reports at the missile sites. Primarily the ones I know about are in western Nebraska, but there's a sprinkling in Wyoming and Colorado, which is part of the missile field. Civilians, law enforcement of cigar-shaped objects, triangular-shaped objects, a disc-shaped object, ball-shaped objects, spheres, all in close proximity to one launch facility or another. So, in the context of all of that, I think the clear implication or inference is that this large cigar-shaped object had something to do with this 50 missile disruption. Proving that at this point would be difficult, but I think the implication is there.
One fast question here. In the event something like this happens, do they scramble aircraft to go up there and see what's going on?
There are reports of scrambles. F.E. Warren does not have its own military aircraft complement. We think that the aircraft that were described in some of these cases chasing these objects away probably came from Colorado. There's a base near Denver. I'm drawing a blank on its name at the moment, but I am aware of reports of, for example, on November 28th at about 11:30 p.m. local, a witness has described a boomerang-shaped object being chased by a military jet fighter. The fighter was in afterburner. It was night. He couldn't tell whether it was an F-16 or F-15. In any case, it quite clearly was following this object. This individual's house is literally surrounded by nuclear missile sites. And he is located in the southwest corner of Nebraska, not too far from F.E. Warren.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into many more of these cases, particularly the earlier cases where you first began your investigation. We have Robert Hastings. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. The best pharmaceutical grade available at all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with Uhimbe and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at herbalhealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature, one person at a time.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed. While the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
What's cooking at PrizeKitchen.com? Plenty! Low prices on your favorite kitchen brand appliances, Vitamix blenders, Omega juicers, reverse osmosis systems, and more. Plus, free shipping on it all. PrizeKitchen.com gives your family the tools for a healthy lifestyle by eating more fruits and veggies and drinking pure water. Go to PrizeKitchen.com. Great selection, low prices, free shipping. PrizeKitchen.com. We help make healthy lifestyles convenient.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use EscapeHarassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We continue with Robert Hastings. The book is UFOs and Nukes. We're focusing on cases where UFOs were seen in and around nuclear weapons facilities and what's happened after that. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien, who is champing at the bit to ask lots of questions. Chris?
Yeah. But one thing that I was actually quite amazed by, and this was all news to me. I'm fairly well versed in some of these cases that you've covered and some of the cases that have been more publicly exposed. But one of the things that I really found fascinating is the history of UFO sightings as it relates to early above-ground nuclear explosions that for nuclear testing. And I had no idea that there were so many events that occurred in the early 50s, even the late 40s, if I remember correctly. Could we talk about those a little bit before we go on to the more to obviously the more well-known cases in the mid-70s?
In 1977, I believe, or 78, Dr. Bruce McAbee, a well-known UFO researcher, he's a retired Navy physicist. He successfully used the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, to access documents from the FBI. I think he got something like 1,500 pages altogether from the late 40s, early 50s, some of which dealt with UFO activity at Los Alamos, the birthplace of nuclear weapons, at Sandia Labs, and basically where I was born, Sandia Base, which assembled and engineered nuclear weapons. There are also references to sightings at the plutonium and uranium production facilities of Oak Ridge, Hanford, later Savannah River. So this thread of UFO activity at nuclear weapons sites in general is very well established and documented, at least as early as December of 1948. Now, what I have done over the years is sought out persons who were either in the Navy or at least in the military during the atomic testing, hydrogen bomb testing in the South Pacific. I've located persons who are interviewed. Everyone's interviewed on tape, basically, when I talk to them. Former sailors describing sightings of UFO activity just prior to the first hydrogen bomb blast in November of 1952. And so on and so forth. There's actually another researcher named Dan Wilson, who's referenced in my book at length. He found a declassified document that now is no longer available, mysteriously enough, after I publicized it. But it basically said that, I think on April 7th, 1954, a UFO buzzed at low altitude the command and control ship of the Operation Castle test, which included Castle Bravo, the largest hydrogen bomb detonation by the U.S. ever to take place. So there's this clear link of UFO activity. I've talked to former Air Force personnel who were designated to fly through the hydrogen clouds, the mushroom clouds after the blast, with radiation sampling equipment. Some of them have reported seeing and or tracking objects on radar in the same vicinity that quite clearly were not conventional aircraft, both by their maneuvers and their extremely high altitudes. So there's that. And then also smaller blasts, there were a series of nearly 100 detonations in Nevada at what was lastly known as current as the Nevada test site. There are a number of persons referenced in my book, military persons, who described seeing UFOs during those various tests. There are references to published accounts of those sightings in some instances in the Las Vegas Sun newspaper. I actually interviewed a man named Walter, I'm drawing a blank here. I got about 3 hours sleep last night. In any case, Walt Levine. Walt Levine was a former Air Force air policeman at the Nevada test site in 1955 for a test called, drawing a blank again. Anyway, he said that for a several month period, his job was to basically monitor the skies for anomalous objects and, then make a call over a secure line to report the sightings of the objects, their altitude, their heading, the description of the object. And then once he made this report, he was to burn the piece of paper that he recorded all this data on. At the teapot tests is what I was trying to think of a few minutes ago, a few seconds ago. So, in short, there are multiple sources from the military, Air Force, the Navy, in some cases the Army, confirming that almost from the get-go, the birth of the nuclear age, UFO activity has been repeatedly observed around weapons laboratories, test sites, weapons storage areas, and most importantly, I think, the weapons deployment sites, the missile sites, bomber bases. So it's across the board. It's been at every Air Force base in the United States decade after decade after decade.
Well, do we have any sense of how the, Twining and other top military brass at the time, you know, what their thinking was in relation to these reports? Because unlike the more popular and more well-known reports of the 70s, these must have been of quite a concern to the brass. And do we have a sense of their thinking at the time?
You mentioned General Twining in particular. I'm unaware of any piece of paper that's been declassified which would suggest that he was aware of this. He probably was, but documenting that with a paper trail, I'm unaware of any evidence. We have, on the other hand, a memorandum from December, I believe, of 1952, written by a man named Dr. Marshall Chadwell, who was the head of the CIA's Office of Scientific Investigation. He was reporting to the then director of CIA, Walter Smith, General Walter B. Smith, that there had been in the previous months a number of incidents of UFOs at high altitude maneuvering above unspecified defense sites. We now know from other sources of information that those incidents quite clearly corresponded to UFO activity at the Hanford site in Washington State, at Oak Ridge and Savannah River in South Carolina. So the director of CIA was informed of these incidents in December of 52, if not earlier. I find it interesting that among all of the UFO documents that the CIA currently has on its website, that document's missing. And it's been in the public domain since the 70s. and yet the CIA doesn't seem to want to acknowledge its existence online.
Sure, but can you be surprised over that?
No, I'm just. It was an opportunity for me to be snide, so I took it.
Okay, because the CIA is not going to admit anything. The government is not. And officially speaking, any of these cases that have been disclosed publicly, they will all have some kind of conventional explanation as far as the government is concerned, right?
Of course. It's actually a non-topic. What I have found in my interviews with, as I said, nearly 130 people who were at various bases and so on, the whole matter, especially in the early days, was really handled on quite a diverse way. Something like the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. I think these incidents were so unprecedented and the shock value was so high that people were making up procedures on the spot, it seemed. Officially, UFO sighting activity was to be reported to Project Blue Book. That did not happen a lot of times in these nuclear weapons-related cases. What I have found instead is that OSI agents, Office of Special Investigations agents, were called in or flown in even to interview the witnesses, the missile launch officers, and so on. In some cases, persons were required to sign national security non-disclosure statements, secrecy oaths, in effect. In other cases, they were just giving verbal admonishments not to talk about various things. And again, there's this really strange combination of responses that the Air Force responded with, you know, reacted with in response to these accounts of UFO activity at nuclear weapons sites. But some of the people I've talked to, they've said repeatedly, this was a non-event. When we got back to the base, we were told nothing to discuss, go home. I assume that other members had all previously reported to the commanders what went on. And so the witnesses that I talked to, all they could do was add verification to what the earlier sources had said. So their commanders didn't really debrief them. They just said, nothing happened, nothing to discuss, go home.
And forget about it. We know the scene. We have Robert Hastings. The book is UFOs and Nukes. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan, in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
Are you tired of spending money for metal canning lids year after year? Then stop! Stop buying metal lids and get Tatler reusable canning lids. Made of USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, Tatler canning lids let you safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways that contain BPA, but Tatler canning lids are indefinitely reusable and guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning and contain no BPA. Tatler lids are dishwasher safe, perfect for standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders by phone at 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's 1-877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com. Tatler Reusable Canning Lids, the original since 1976.
Don't let summer be a bummer. Stop sunburn pain, poison ivy, and mosquito bite itch, and the burn of athlete's foot with just one Safe-All natural first aid product, Dermatol. Many GCN listeners have already discovered how effective Dermatol is as a natural, non-acidic way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many skin problems. Now this special offer. Buy one bottle of Dermatol, get one bottle free. Call 1-800-217-6677 and mention GCN. Dermatol is the must-have first aid product for your preparedness kit. Made in America by Americans, Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Call 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. And ask for the GCN Buy One, Get One Free Special. Or use coupon code GCN at checkout at DermatolUSA.com. Spelled DermatolUSA.com. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the podcast, The Gold Standard of Paranormal Radio.
We're back with Robert Hastings. The book is UFOs and Nukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien on the Paracast. In connection with guests, when we have enough advance warning, we put up a thread in a forum called the Question Bank at forum.theparacast.com. Look for that place because that's where you can ask your questions. And we have a few that are going to be strewn throughout the show as we go on, as they seem relevant. Chris, you found a question that kind of relates to where we've gone so far.
Yeah, we've got more than a few questions, Robert. Actually, your appearance here has generated probably the most amount of questions that we've had in quite some time. Much to your credit, there's a lot of interest out there, as you well know, in this subject. And I have a question that kind of relates to this early period that you've just been referring to. And it comes from one of our longtime posters, Blowfish, and he asked, Mr. Hastings, have you got any eyewitness accounts of UFO interference of ordnance bases prior or during World War II? Good question.
I'm sorry, there was a little blip
Okay, I'll ask it again. Mr. Hastings, have you got any eyewitness accounts of UFO interference over ordnance bases prior or during World War II?
Off the top of my head, I would have to say no. Of course, there are the well-recorded and reported sightings of the so-called Foo Fighters, essentially UFOs, by both Allied and Axis pilots during World War II, by bomber crews, fighter pilots, and so on, of luminous balls of light. The occasional disc-shaped object in daylight. But as far as these things coming down and hovering over standard ordnance sites, I personally can't think of anything at the moment. Now, I have, since my book came out in 2008, I'm currently taking additional sources of information. Of course, I've interviewed a man named Bud Clem, who is a former U.S. Navy pilot in World War II. I have all of his military paperwork. His squadron was stationed near the Hanford site in Washington State in January and February of 1945, several months before the atomic bombings in Japan. And Mr. Clem reports three separate incidents that he was aware of where a bright object hovered directly over the Hanford site and was chased away by a member of his squadron on three separate occasions. And the object just raced away at enormous velocity. So you have, even prior to the end of World War II, you have a nuclear weapons-related incident in that case.
Okay. Now, one of the things, of course, anytime you find someone who makes a very strong presentation about UFO evidence, there's always going to be another shoe that drops. There have been some controversies over UFOs and nukes. Some people, at least one particular person, has gone in there and has attacked you for what you're saying. What's that all about?
You're talking about James T. Carlson. James T. Carlson has some problems, and I am simply repeating what his father told me on the phone in 2008. Mr. Carlson Sr. has made similar statements to two other individuals, and as I've told James Carlson, I've prepared to have these this testimony presented under oath in a court of law if he wants to pursue this. But let's just say that Mr. Carlson's grasp on reality as regards this subject matter of UFOs and nukes is not exactly solid. His father was a launch officer at Malmstrom Air Force Base in 1967. He was at a place called Echo Flight. His deputy commander was a man named Walt Fiegel, who's now a retired colonel. When Bob Salas, who was a missile launch officer at another site at Malmstrom in March of 67, Oscar Flight, when Mr. Salas went public with an incident involving a UFO apparently shutting down most or all of his missiles at Oscar, Mr. Carlson Jr., James Carlson, viciously attacked Bob Salas and said that he was a liar and a fraud. Because why? Because James' father, Eric Carlson, said there were no UFOs at Malmstrom in 1967. So James has frenetically just posted information on probably 1,000 websites, it seems that way, saying that Bob Salas and now myself are liars and frauds because we contend that the UFOs involved with two separate mass missile shutdowns at Malmstrom in March of 67. Unfortunately for James Carlson, we have interviews on tape, both Bob Salas and I, with their launch officers. Eric Carlson's deputy commander, Walter Fiegel, has discussed at length with me on tape, which is now online. You can hear him discussing what really happened at Echo. He received reports of a, quote, large round object hovering over one of the missiles at Echo just as the entire flight failed. I've recently, as of this past May 6th, interviewed Colonel Mywald, who was Bob Salas's commander at the other flight involved, Oscar Flight, in which one can hear online Colonel Mywald, now retired Colonel Mywald, saying that Bob Salas's story about the UFO activity at Oscar during the shutdown there is, quote, very accurate. Now, I am in the process of rebuilding my website. It's virtually done. One can go to UFOHastings.com and see detailed articles about these two incidents, including links to audio tapes. The link should be up within the next day or two. If one wants to immediately listen to links, I'm not sure when this is going to be aired initially, then one could go to the UFO Chronicles, search for Colonel Walt Fiegel, F-I-G-E-L, or Colonel Fred Mywald, M-E-I-W-A-L-D, and you will find links to my audio tape conversations with these individuals. So, in short, to summarize, two separate incidents in March of 67 at Malmstrom at Echo Flight and Oscar Flight involved UFO activity during large-scale missile shutdowns. Three of the four officers involved in those two incidents have now gone on the record with various degrees of enthusiasm. Fiegel and Mywald are not thrilled about the spotlight being on them, but they have confirmed what Bob Salas has said. And what I say, that indeed UFOs are involved in these shutdown incidents. So James Carlson can go on slandering and libeling me and Bob Salas till the cows come home, but it doesn't change the facts.
So what's his motive?
I think, I'm not a psychiatrist. I will simply repeat what I said earlier. His father has made statements to me and two other individuals about his, quote, problems. And so I think that's one of the factors.
To specify what those problems are.
I'm going to, I've been quite candid. Let's just say they're of a psychological nature. And I think if anyone reads what James Carlson has posted online, it's not terribly hard to figure out that something's not quite right in terms of his approach to addressing the subject. I'm going to leave it at that. Any further discussion of this is going to have to be in a legal venue. And I've thrown down the gauntlet. I've thrown down the gauntlet to James Carlson. You know, your father has said things to me and two other individuals. We will all testify under oath in a court of law about those conversations. The point that should not be missed, the key point, is that the officers themselves, including Bob Salas, of course, but the two that, according to James Carlson, say there were no UFOs involved in these incidents, specifically Colonels Fiegel and Maywald, have said just the opposite on tape repeatedly to me and Bob Salas. So James Carlson can continue to live in his fantasy world. I'm not terribly thrilled by being called a liar and a fraud all over the internet, but, the facts speak for themselves. Anyone can listen to these audio tapes.
Well, the fact is, of course, that we here at the PowerCast, we get criticized for all sorts of different reasons, existent and otherwise. I mean, we're not above criticisms. We do lots of things that are messed up, as anyone does.
Yeah.
But we have people online who seem to have nothing better to do than form what we might call the PowerCast Hate Brigade. We mention them, but we don't name them on the show, and I think that's why they hate us even more. They hate us even more because we refuse to acknowledge their existence except in a very general fashion. I mean, if you go to the forums, you're going to see some of the names of the worst offenders, but we're not going to glorify them here. If they don't like the show, don't listen. I mean, what's so important? Is this going to take over your life? It's a talk show. We like doing it. Our listeners like what we do. And if you find you don't, well, there are other radio shows, or turn off the radio and listen to music. I don't know. And if you have a comment or a question about the PowerCast, write us. news@theparacast.com. Once again, that's news@theparacast.com. We will read each and every message we get. That's a promise. Robert Hastings is our guest. Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. And for once and for always, this is
the PowerCast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy at 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.